Big, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz, presented by Progressive Insurance. Let's start you off with the headlines that you need to know. All this Major League Baseball talk we've been having, well, MLB has a draft plan. Major League Baseball plans to hold their 2020 MLB draft remotely, according to a memo obtained by ESPN's Jeff Passan today. As of now, teams are not allowed to have draft rooms and will do all drafting via video conference. That could change, the memo says, as the draft date approaches. So this will look a lot like to the NFL and how they manage it. Day one of the draft right now is scheduled to be June 10th at 7 p.m. Eastern and will include the first four rounds. So we'll keep you updated on that as we get more information. Next up in your headlines, James Harrison clarifying some comments that blew up yesterday as he was on a podcast yesterday with Barstool. He was on Barstool talking about the Gius thing. He said that Mike Tomlin never did, handed me an envelope after a hit. And he said, I'm not going to say what, but he handed me an envelope after that. That has created incredible bounty gate comparisons, and that comment has blown up. He went to social media, quote, wow, y'all really comparing what I said to bounty gate? Harrison wrote, Mike T has never paid me for hurting someone or trying to hurt someone or put a bounty on anybody. If you know the full story of what happened back then, you'd know that BS fine for illegal play wasn't even penalized during the game. So Harrison, not backing away from the comments that he received an envelope, but making it clear that that is much different than bounty gate. By the way, it should be noted the Steelers have already said that there's no truth to this. And lastly, arrest warrants have been issued in South Florida for Giants cornerback DeAndre Baker and Seahawks corner Quentin Dunbar in connection to an armed robbery investigation. So the alleged incident took place late Wednesday night at a party that began Wednesday evening. According to the arrest warrant, Baker and Dunbar accused of stealing money and watches with force while armed with semi-automatic firearms. It states that Baker intentionally threatened victims with a firearm also. The warrant includes conflicting accounts from witnesses as to whether Dunbar was armed, some saying they didn't see a gun in his possession. We'll see what it means moving forward. The NFL and both teams have given us the blanket statement of they're aware of the matter with no further comment. Those are the headlines you need to know. First, take your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz, and this is what we're asking you. We've heard some conversation that we're asking you to chime in on. Rather than paraphrase everything, I want you to hear the comments, at least in part, that you're reacting to and that First Take's reacting to. So first, here's Tampa Bay Rays ace, it's hard for me to say also, Blake Snell, commenting about the fact that he's not willing to play for less money.
No, I'm not splitting no revenue. I want all mine. Bro, y'all gotta understand too, cause y'all gonna be like, bro, Blake, play for the love of the game, man. What's wrong with you, bro? Money should not be a thing. Bro, I'm risking my life. What do you mean it should not be a thing? It 100% should be a thing. If I'm gonna play, I should be getting the money I signed to be getting paid. I should not be getting half of what I'm getting paid cause the season's cut in half on top of a 33% cut of the half that's already there. So I'm really getting like 25%. On top of that, it's getting taxed. So imagine how much I'm actually making to play. You know what I'm saying? Like, I ain't making shit. And on top of that, so all that money's gone. And now I play risking my life. And if I get the Rona, on top of that, if I get the Rona, guess what happens with that? Oh, yeah, that's in my body forever. That damage is not going to be like the damage that was done to my body. That's going to be there forever.
So that's Blake Snell's comments on Twitch that have caused an uproar. Now, what do you do when one of your biggest stars in your sport chimes in with some level of support? That's what happened when Bryce Harper said this.
Yo, I love Snell. That's my guy, bro.
He said if someone gets it, they got to live with that for the rest of their lives.
He ain't lying. He's right.
He's like, I need my. He's like, give me my money or I'm not playing.
Hey, bro, you're speaking the truth, bro. I ain't mad at him. Somebody's got to say it. At least he manned up and said it. Good for him. I love Snell, man. He's a beast, too. Best lefties in the game, bro.
So let's get to some Straight Talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. I want to start by saying this again. And in case you haven't heard any of my stance on this, I want to make it clear. I believe that players are human beings. And as human beings, they have the right to decide what they are or are not comfortable with at any time, right? I have no problem with a player coming out and saying, you know what, in this pandemic era, I'm not comfortable playing. That's fine. However, we can also acknowledge the other side of it, which is when you make it about money, when you're essentially saying, I won't play unless I get paid my full salary, Now you have an optics issue in a country that's facing the largest unemployment rate that we've seen since the Great Depression. So that's why we've asked you, how should leagues handle paying their players during a pandemic? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Before we get to any of First Take's reaction, let's get Scott in L.A. Scott, what's your take on this?
Hey, thanks for letting me come in, and I apologize for the rant ahead of time. I would never advocate for something that was unsafe for players to do. So first and foremost, let's get that out of the way. However, if it's determined that they're going to move ahead and play an abbreviated season, I am sick and tired of hearing millionaire ball players talk about losing their money. I'm a consumer of 45 years of this sport, and I'm sick of people telling me I can't look in a player's pocket, but I can look in an owner's pocket. In MLB, there's reserve labor. If Blake Snell doesn't want to play, they've got the AAA, AA, all the way down to rookie ball to replace him. Nobody's forcing him to do it. But it's crazy in the time of an epidemic to expect to get fully paid for a full season when you're not playing a full season. It's just simple math. It has nothing to do with money. It's about labor. Where was the players' union when the Astros got caught cheating? They were silent. Where were they when there was the steroids? They were silent. They are now advocating a position of getting full money for half of a year. That is just absolutely crazy when 25 to 30% of the population is unemployed. It comes across as greedy on the players' part, and I will boycott if this happens to take place. It's just out of whack. And it's time that the owners took a stand and wrestled back ownership of their sport, and this revenue sharing gets tilted back towards the owners. They should draw the line and use the reserve labor that they have to replace Mr. Snell and Mr. Harper if they don't want to play for an abbreviated salary. Thanks for letting me on.
Hey, I love the passion. And look, I think it's important there to hear from, as you said, a consumer of the sport for 45 years, because realistically, you're the customer in this that matters the most, right? So one thing that I think you said there that's really smart is let's acknowledge that the owners have an opportunity. And I know that sounds very weird, but if the owners want at this point to sort of skew the game however they want it through this process, you're absolutely right. This is the one time where you can go to fans of your sport and essentially say, you know what? I'm sorry, but we're only willing to do this, and these players aren't willing to play for less. And in a world where we do have, in a country where we have unemployment rates like we do, and in a country where families all over are worried about how they're going to put food on their table, you'll actually win a lot of favor from the fans. I think it's rare in this opportunity for a fan to actually turn around and understand why you would side against a superstar player. But if this actually becomes about money, I think you could see that here, because it's easy to vilify whoever is standing on the side of we won't do this. That's absolutely, health and safety aside, if it becomes about money, whichever side is making the money the big deal in the most relatable way has the opportunity to win. And for owners, as much as we can talk about the fact that they're billionaires, when you see a bunch of millionaire athletes that aren't willing to play, I understand the sentiment there. So you're right. Dipping into the talent pool and saying, sorry guys, but these players just aren't willing to play is actually an opportunity where I think fans would understand that more than we think. Straight Talk, that's Straight Talk Wireless, everything for less, only at Walmart. That's a little of ours. You guys are chiming in on it. We're going to let it happen. But first, I want you to hear a little of what Stephen A. and Max had to say about Snell and Harper's conversations today on First Take.
I'm not Dr. Fauci, and I'm not trying to be, and I'm not going to get into the minutia of the things that you say as it pertains to the threats that entail the coronavirus. We all know we're living it right now. Gloves, mask, all of that stuff is necessary right now. Safety first. We get all of that. I don't need to regurgitate those comments. What I will say, however, is this. You are a Major League Baseball player. You are a participant in America's national pastime, which is clearly lagging behind, the NFL and the NBA in this day and age. They have failed to ingratiate themselves with the younger audience. Their audience gets older and older. Everybody's looked at the sport. You know, you've got the reviving baseball in the inner city and things of that nature, their RBI program and stuff like that, where they try to pay attention and really ingratiate themselves with minorities throughout this country, even though they usually go elsewhere outside this country to get minorities. But the point is, they have been lagging behind those other two sports, basketball basketball and football because they fail to ingratiate themselves with the younger generation. And so because of that, you're looking at the dissipating power that they've had. It's dissipated to some degree. The Players Association, as powerful and as potent as it is not what it used to be. And we all know that. The players themselves have lamented it. And as a result of that, you're going to have yourself, you're going to find yourself in situations where you alienate, if you alienate an audience in this day and age, you're hurting yourself. Snell is out there saying, man, I got to get mine. He makes perfect sense. Excuse me, I tell everybody all the time, I don't give a damn how much money you make. Give away 50% to Uncle Sam because they coming for that. So whatever they said you make, chop that in half. And then when you consider the cuts that they already negotiated, I have no problem with the Players Association's position that, wait a minute, we already discussed this. We had already dealt with this. What's the problem now? I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
What I have a problem with is how he came across. 33 million plus people have filed for unemployment. Oh, I got to get mine when you were scheduled to make $7 million. It's just a dumb thing to say.
It's a bad look.
You signed the contract. You signed for 13 years, over $300 million. I don't blame them one bit. It's just not smart to say that. That's all I'm saying.
You're right. It's a bad look. But even baseball, as I was saying, that's been better in recent decades in terms of paying players than the other sports and contracts, etc., even they want to save money, right? Like they don't want to pay labor. So they have okay, a system where the first several years of your career, you don't really make money. Now, you make money compared to the working man, obviously, because you're among the best in the world at what you do in a very rare skill. But Snell made like $500,000 for winning the Cy Young Award. Not as a bonus. That was his entire salary. Eventually, he signs a $50 million extension. Stephen A., that's still lower than he would get on the open market, but he's not a free agent yet, right? So he signs a $50 million extension, and normally these teams escalate the salaries. So year one, it's $7 million. Year two, it's 11, yep, then 13, then 16.
Matt,
the teams do that to help themselves financially. So if Snell's going to sit there and say, wait a minute, I'm in this $7 million year where that's going to get cut in half,
Max,
now, I'm good. I'll wait until I get the payout in years three, four, and five,
Max,
or whatever it is.
Your argument is profound if somebody was debating whether he was right or wrong. That's not what we're debating here. What we're talking about is how smart was it to say that at a time like this? You remember, the owners want them to come back to the negotiating table. Remember, there's a CBA in 2020 to deal with. I mean, what are you doing? You shut the hell up and let your Players Association speak. You shut the hell up.
Why?
You signed a $50 million contract.
Okay.
You can't tell people at a time when 33 million people plus are on unemployment at this time. You can't sit up there, oh, I got to get mine. I can't accept half of 7 million. Shut up. That's just dumb. Period.
ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. We're taking your take on this. How should leagues handle it? I'm really trying to find the other side. You know, part of the thing, one of the things I like to do with you guys is present both sides of it just to stir. You know, I like to stir things up and sort of disrupt all of it. I'm trying to find the other side of this. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's where we're taking your take on how leagues should handle paying their players during a pandemic. Doe in California, what do you got? What's your take on this one?
So this is what I got, man. These guys, they're already overpaid as it is. Bryce Harper, $400 million bust probably here coming up in the future. How many baseball players actually live out that big, huge contract anyways once they get it? This guy Snell, never even heard of him. Tampa Bay, are you serious? Okay. I mean, and his attitude and his take, this is exactly why I start watching more AAA games than Major League games anyways. Not to mention, I can't even afford to take my family to a ball game anymore and hopefully expect to see Bryce Harper or any of these big names playing because they might take Sunday off. Okay. So they're not even playing their full contract, 462 anyways, during the whole season. So me, myself, AAA all the way. If you're playing 82, you get paid for it. If it all comes down to it and they're still not happy, I think the owner should offer piecework to them. You get paid for the home runs you hit, like you said you were. You get paid for the strikeouts that you get that you said you would get. You get paid for all them stolen bases. You get paid for them home runs, them RBIs. You start living out your contract and then pay them. Forget all this big contracts and then bust at the end. No, I mean, at least NBA, and like Stephen A. said,
at least the NBA and the NFL, at least they live it up. I mean, at least once they get going to another team, they actually live out that contract and come out and they actually produce and win another Super Bowl. Peyton Manning and all those guys, they get traded to a team, they go to another team, they win. Joe Montana, he was a winner when he got traded. Jerry Rice, when he went to the Raiders, Super Bowl. All those guys, they always end up paying for their for whatever they get paid. So you know what? This is exactly why I'm sick of the major leagues. This is exactly why I watch more minor league baseball than major league baseball anyways.
Well, thanks for your take on it. First, take your take on ESPN News. I will say this, though. Like, okay, so let me just pose the other side of that, because a big part of what you just talked about is how Bryce Harper was underpaid. Okay, he has a massive contract, but the Phillies, according to Forbes, are worth $2 billion. And if you look at a quick Google search, their most recent profit numbers were around $90 million. So even after they overpaid, supposedly, all these athletes, they still profited $90 million. So, you know, we're turning around. That's part of the player argument here, is that you've got owners that can afford to pay this payroll, the owners that are still making money as a general rule. Now, this year, ownership won't be, right? Like, that's a presumption. Without the TV contracts, with the money being less, we don't know what that'll look like. But it's not as simple. I understand what you're saying about it's a quick reaction to say Bryce Harper is overpaid and as a result, you can't take your family. Well, part of that comes back to the fact that the Phillies know supply and demand. They're still making money hand over fist. Bryce Harper's not overpaid because the Phillies are still profiting at huge dollars. I mean, so where's the line on that? By the way, don't forget, tune into the conclusion of The Last Dance this Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Listen to the wrap-up podcast hosted by Jalen and Jacoby immediately following the broadcast, presented by State Farm and AT&T, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. You guys want to chime in, we'll let you chime in. We're going to get more of your take in just a second. But you do, speaking of The Last Dance, need to hear a little bit of what Bill Simmons had to say today. He joined First Take to talk about three-peats and comparing the first three-peat to the second three-peat for Michael Jordan.
How do you rate the competition he faced in the second half? You know, because people talk about, well, the Celtics and the Lakers had each other and the Pistons were older by this point. How do you rate the opponents Jordan beat in the second half of his career?
I think the first three-peat, you look at how deep the league was at the time when it hadn't been murdered by expansion yet, and it makes it more impressive. I think the league from 1990 to 93 was so loaded. And you even look at the All-NBA teams. You're talking about Hall of Famers across the board, first team, second team, even some on the third team. By the time we got to the mid-90s, they had added four expansion teams over the course of that decade. They were up to 29 teams. And honestly, I think that was one of the reasons Jordan came back. And if you read the Jordan books, he started looking at the league, how diluted it was, thinking to himself, wow, I could come back and steal a couple more titles. Like, he told BJ Armstrong this. So, you know, I think it was an easier run, no question, the second time. The best way to look at this is look at the Utah Jazz. That was a team that, when you go through the 1988 through basically 95, 96, could never get over the hump, would fall short over and over again with Malone and Stockton as their two best guys. By the time they got to the finals in 97 and 98, the third best guy was Hornacek, who was at the tail end of his prime. Other than that, a bunch of role players. It was not a better Jazz team than what they had from 88 to 92. They won 64 games in 1997. It makes no sense because Malone and Stockton at that point had already played 1,000 games. So I think the league was definitely watered down. I think it was one of the reasons they won 72 and 69 in back-to-back years, the Bulls. And if you go back and read what people were writing at the time, they were saying it was watered down. And there was a big argument about, all right, what if they win 72 games, what does this mean? And ironically, you know, you look at the Lakers in 1972 when they went, I think, 69 and 13, they went 33 straight. It was the same thing. The league had overexpanded. And if you had two awesome players on the same team, it was a massive advantage. And I just think the league wasn't as deep.
Though you mentioned the generational gap between how maybe 35 and under wants to have their own GOAT, and then over that, they have their GOAT of Michael Jordan. And you've written about this, the battle for GOAT supremacy. What could LeBron do, in your mind, to catch MJ for that GOAT status?
He's got to beat him with time. It's got to be a thing where he is still succeeding in his third decade as an NBA player, and the totality of his resume, we just look at it and we go, he just had a better career. Like, it's just unassailable where Jordan plays basically peaks from 87 to 98, but takes a year and a half off for baseball. If LeBron is still going, you know, in year 21 and 22, the numbers are just going to be insurmountable at some point from a career standpoint. So I think it'll turn into two different arguments. It'll turn into whose apex was the best and then whose career was the best. But, you know, I think with LeBron, and I look at even some of the stuff I've written over the years and said about him, we've overreacted each way, right? In 2010 and 2011, we overreacted the bad way. It was like, oh, LeBron doesn't have it. He doesn't have what Jordan had. He's never going to make it. And then he wins in 12 and 13. Well, I know I did. You know,
yeah,
you didn't worry about his insides?
No. What I'm saying is that, listen, we chronicle the deeds when they transpire. You know, when we looked at LeBron in 2011, when that happened, that's what we said at that particular moment in time. We can't live in a world where we're sitting there going like this. Tomorrow is not guaranteed. We recognize that. But, oh, you know what? He'll be fine in 5, 6, 8 years. At that moment, what you said, what I said, what we all said was accurate. And then he grew and showed his greatness. But let me get back to something you said earlier, Bill, because I want to make sure that I got you accurately about the blasphemy I think you're spewing. Are you trying to say that at some point in time that a guy that's lost six championships now, as great as he is, Mount Rushmore, a guy that lost six championships has an opportunity in his career to eclipse Michael Jordan? Is that what you're saying?
Not for me, but I do think the case will be open for it because I think the totality of the career and the numbers and when you add everything up and it's just like the guy just played way longer at a way higher level than Jordan did, I think the case will be open. And I do think there's a recency bias with all this stuff.
When it comes to insurance, don't forget State Farm's a real deal with over 19,000 local agents and an award-winning mobile app. You can get the help you need when you need it. Find an agent or get a quote today at statefarm.com. It's First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio. Coming up, NASCAR returns this Sunday. We're going to talk to an expert about it. Plus, we're going to get more of your take. That's all coming up. It's First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, protecting your business with specialized coverages for your commercial vehicles. More at progressive.com. Don't forget, we're getting your take. 888-STATE-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Looks like we now have a few Major League Baseball players standing in support of the concept of not playing for less than the full money that they are owed. How should leagues handle paying their players during a pandemic? 888-STATE-ESPN, 888-729-3776. By the way, if we were playing a shot game today, based on how many times I couldn't say paying their players during a pandemic, we would all be very drunk right now. At least I've gotten through it twice. Okay, while we get more of your take in just a second, before you get to that, I want to get into a little bit of NASCAR. We're going to see the return this weekend. So to get the scoop on it and the best information possible, we go to one of the best we have. Ryan McGee joins the show. You can listen to him on Marty and McGee every Saturday morning, 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern. The great guest tomorrow, NASCAR President Steve Phelps, going to be joining the show tomorrow at 8:30 a.m. Eastern. So, Ryan McGee, what should we expect from the return of NASCAR tomorrow?
Well, first of all, what was that you just said about paying the players in the pandemic, and what was that?
That's not easy to say. Like, paying the players during a pandemic has tripped me up all day. I've ended up with playing the payers.
Yeah, well, tell producer James not to put that in any copy I have to read on Marty McGee Saturday morning because
I'm telling you, man, it's not easy. Like,
no, it's not. But listen, so NASCAR coming back is a big deal. And people ask me, and we will ask Steve Phelps this on Marty McGee on Saturday morning, but people, I wrote a big story for ESPN.com that's up right now, and you know, the people at NASCAR and the people who own the race teams and the drivers themselves are the first that they are unapologetic when asked, why are you coming back before everyone else? And it's first to market. You know, it is. It's they need the TV money. Yes. They need the sponsorship money. Yes. But at the end of the day, you're talking about drinking games. I've said all week, if I took a shot every time someone at NASCAR mentioned the 1979 Daytona 500 to me this week, I would have already been in worse shape than I have been drinking-wise throughout this entire quarantine because that was the race in 1979, for folks that don't know, the first time the Daytona 500 was televised flag to flag live. There's only three networks. It was on CBS, and the entire East Coast was snowed in. And we had a huge fight. Cale Yarborough and the Allison brothers fought live television after wrecking each other out of the race. Richard Petty won the race, beat A.J. Foyt and Darrell Waltrip, and it was the perfect storm. And NASCAR started that day on a three-decade climb of growth. And they're not on that climb anymore. They haven't been for 10 years. And so a lot of people point to the – they're not saying that Sunday will be the 1979 Daytona 500, but they're saying that they're the only game in town. So chances are a lot of people will be watching that wouldn't normally watch a race from Darlington.
We're talking to ESPN senior writer Ryan McGee on First Take Your Take. I'm Jason Fitz. So we obviously drivers are mostly secluded. We get that. But their pit crews are not. So yeah. What's the safety concern for NASCAR at this point?
Well, it's a long list. I mean, my editors, when I first sent that story into .com, I overwrite anyway. And they sent it back and went, you even over – there's too many words here. But there's no other way to explain it. You know, the regulations that are in place, everyone will be screened when they arrive to the track on Sunday morning. It's been described to me as like a TSA line except with thermometers. And it will not be a COVID-19 test, but they will have already turned in their medical paperwork. Like, this is what the physicians should see on site from these crew members and drivers and the other people that are allowed in the racetrack. And anything that deviates from that, particularly when it comes to temperature, they go see into this medical tent to see a doctor. And if they think there's a chance that they have anything, they're going home. And if anyone walks into that garage after they've gone through their screening and they don't wear their mask, their face mask while they're working, they will be ejected from the track and could be fined as much as $50,000.
How weird is it to do that job with a face mask on? I mean, that's got to be difficult, right?
It is difficult, but I'll say this too. For the guys who go over the wall, and I'm talking about the pit crew guys that you see go over the wall on Saturday, and that's the vast majority of the people who will be in the garage, they wear helmets anyway, and they wear face covers anyway to help. They're fire resistant. They wear fire suits. They wear gloves. I mean, they're already geared up for this, and the drivers are too. But you're limited to 16 people per team. You're limited to the area where you work, which has been taped off with red tape. None of these guys have seen each other for 2.5 months. You're friends on other teams. You're not shaking hands. You're not hugging it out. Everyone, they actually have laid down red tape fits that tells you where you can and can't walk, depending on what your job is. So, say Jimmy Johnson will be sitting in his motor coach alone on Sunday afternoon, and they'll say, all right, it's time to race. And he will put on his gear. No one will help him with that. He'll put on his glove, he'll put on his face mask, he'll put on his helmet, and he will walk through the prescribed path between red tape lines from his motor coach to his race car, get in his race car and drive. And that's what all 40 drivers will do. So anyone who deviates from that, NASCAR said they're not messing around. They'll have to go home, and they'll be hit with at least a $10,000 fine, as much as a $50,000 fine.
We're talking to Ryan McGee, ESPN senior writer. You can hear him, Marty and McGee, Saturday mornings. Don't forget NASCAR president Steve Phelps joins the show tomorrow at 8:30 a.m. Eastern. So the celebration moment just feels like it's going to be weird. How does everybody celebrate in a non-contact world?
Well, you know, I talked to Chad Knaus about this, Hall of Fame crew chief, going to be as soon as he's done, and worked with Jimmy Johnson forever. He oversees William Byron's car now, drives Jeff Gordon's old ride, the 24. And Knaus said, you know, he said he's not going to the race shop to work. He's only working from home until he goes to the racetrack. The people that prep the cars are kept separate. They're kept away from the people who actually go to the racetrack, so that there's no threat of anyone, you know, transferring anything virus-wise. And he said to me, he said, it will feel normal once they get a couple of laps into the race, and the race for 400 miles itself at Darlington, that'll feel normal, other than no fans in the stands. But everything leading up to it and everything afterwards is going to be completely different. I have no idea what victory lane. I don't think there's going to be a victory lane. There'll probably be a couple of pictures, and that's it. And, in fact, only 4 media members are going to be allowed on site, sports writers. They're going to be kept completely spread out in this giant press box, nowhere near each other. The television reporters are going to be outside the racetrack across the parking lot, and that's it. And so we'll be interviewing the winner of the race and the top finishers via video conference, because Zoom rules the world right now, right?
That's crazy. We're talking to Ryan McGee joining the show. How confident are you that this is safe for everybody?
I'm confident in that this is as extreme as you could take it. But you're also talking to a guy. Listen, I went to the drugstore this morning to pick up a prescription, and no way I'm going in there and out of there without my face mask on. And so as soon as I hit the truck, you know, I'm sanitizing everything. I mean, that's just, I'm not going to run the risk of bringing anything into the house. So I'm confident that they have done their due diligence. The medical professionals that they're in constant contact with are the best and includes the CDC. The NASCAR officials have been on the same conference calls with, that the NFL commissioner's been on, that the MLB commissioner's been on, that all the executives from all the other major league sports have been on. I think they've done as much as they can do. And I've said since day one, the two leading candidates to come back first would be motorsports and golf. And there's motorsports and golf is coming soon because there's kind of natural, social distancing built into this. And NASCAR has already announced they're going to do this all the way through the end of June, at least. And they've announced their schedule through June 24th, and all of these rules, including no fans, will be in place. So we'll see. But I'll tell you this too, if it goes south, they will 100% pull the plug. They've made no bones about that. It's all written in pencil. If for some reason something goes wrong over the 11 days when they're running seven races between Darlington and Charlotte, they will absolutely put it back on pause. But for now, it is not.
You can follow him on Twitter at ESPN McGee. Don't forget to listen to Marty and McGee Saturday, 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio. Check out the article out on ESPN.com. Not only one of the best with NASCAR, but just one of the best human beings we have at our company. Ryan McGee, thanks for the time, man. Hope you and yours are safe. Thanks for hanging out with us. We really appreciate it.
I'm sending you a virtual hug right now, bud.
I will take it until I can get a real one someday somehow. Elbow bumps in the meantime. McGee, we appreciate it as always. And look, Ryan just said, not only are all eyes going to be within NASCAR, all sporting eyes are going to be on this, because I'm telling you, every time one sport puts itself out there, every other commissioner of every other sport is watching it to see what the takeaways are, where the successes are, because any failure on any of them becomes a red flag that every sport will have to deal with. If you missed any of today's show, go check it out. It's on demand in the First Take Your Take podcast, brought to you by Capital One. With Capital One, you can open a new checking or savings account. No fees or minimums. Welcome to banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Approval required. Capital One, NA member FDIC. What's your take on how leagues should handle paying their players during a pandemic? You guys are fired up on the line, so we're going to let you take the rest of the show over. More of your take coming up next. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. That's next on First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio. First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. You can chime in. We've been asking you how leagues should handle paying their players during a pandemic. All of this based on the fact that Blake Snell, the Tampa Bay Rays ace, came out and said he's going to get his. He wants his money, and he's not going to come back on a 50-50 revenue split, which is what Major League Baseball has proposed to the Players Association. Now, you have Bryce Harper, obviously one of the biggest stars in Major League Baseball, chiming out in support of Snell's comments. So you have at least an underlying presumption that there's going to be a money issue as they try and figure out what the league will look like coming back. Of course there's going to be a money issue. So the question is, how should they handle it? Aaron in Illinois, what's your take? What do you got?
So I think I'm on the player's side, because there's a certain expectation for the players to come back in shape and ready to play. I know it's going to be difficult for at this time for them to stay in shape. So they could have their wives throwing them soft toss in the basement just to stay in shape. And if they come back and they haven't stayed in shape, then it's going to be a diluted game we don't want to watch anyway.
Well, and that's fair. I mean, they're putting in the work, right? You know, I think that's got to be part of, if you're an owner, this is for any employee. Somebody tells you got to do your job and make half the money. Now, it's half the games. So it just becomes difficult, because I can see both sides. Eric in Tennessee, what do you got? What's your take?
Yeah, good afternoon. I just wanted to say, what I think people are ignoring the fact is that the players have already agreed to a prorated amount. They're not going to make their full season salary. They're going to make enough salary. It's like a prorated. They're going to make 82 games worth of salary. So that's one thing. So they're not getting their full salary. But also, people keep bringing up AAA, AA, and all of that, ignoring the fact that if those players could make more money, they would. Like, baseball players don't choose how much money they get paid. Some owner or general manager decided to pay them a certain amount. So if someone's overpaid, that's not their fault, so to speak. Someone offered $400 million, which one of us is going to turn that down? I mean, none of us are as good as our job. Most of us aren't as those baseball players are at their job. It's a small, finite amount of people that have that specific skill set. So the owners, when there's a surplus, when they make more money than what their expenses, that money isn't shared with the fans. That money isn't shared with baseball players. It goes in their pocket. And I just find it very weird that players think that, I mean, that fans think that owners losing money, that should be shared. But when they gain money, it's not. They charge, the Yankees make how much money per year? Their tickets aren't getting cheaper. The Yankees,
but isn't that a basic?
They make the same amount. They don't
let me ask you this, though. Let me just get your thought on this real quick. Isn't that the principle of every business? When businesses start making less, they cut employees, they cut pay. When businesses start making more, do they give everybody massive raises across the board? I mean, that's just business 101, even though it's sports, isn't it?
No, I understand that completely. But when it happens to us, we feel bad. We're like, that's terrible. And our heart goes out to those people that lose their jobs. But for some reason, we can't compartmentalize and say labor with management. We just make it about millionaires, missing the fact that if you could get $1 million working at McDonald's, everyone would get $1 million working at McDonald's. No one would say, don't pay me $1 million for my job. Like, oh, I know you want to pay me all of this money. Please don't pay me. Pay me the bare minimum of what everyone else is making. Like, no one wants to do that. People don't get education for that. People don't work for that. People work because they want to make more. It's just that baseball is a revenue sports, generate revenue, so there's a direct comparison to that. A lot of our jobs don't generate that type of revenue, and it's sad to say it, but that's just the truth of it.
It's a fair take. I agree with everything you're saying. Part of the reason the owners are asking for a 50-50 revenue split, it should be noted, is because this is all on the presumption that there's no fans in the stand. So while the players have agreed to take less, the understanding for baseball owners is that you're not going to have anybody in the stands, and that means that suddenly you're not making any money. That's part of where their mindset comes from. Dan in Indianapolis, what's your take?
Hey, Fitzy. Thanks for having me on. I got a couple ideas. I think the first one with Snell is no decisions made in a vacuum, right? His comments are closed-minded and callous, and I understand there's an inherent risk to coming to work during a COVID period, but his statements are so out of touch with reality, man. You have 36 million people unemployed, and there are higher-risk individuals going to work every day for pennies. Think about all the people that are in grocery markets that don't have the medical access that elite athletes do who are going to get tested frequently. These people are already at a disadvantage, right? They're already older. They may have comorbidities. They're already not as healthy. So I think for him to say he's on, like, the Mount Rushmore or top five of risking his life is unreal. That said, if he has, like, someone at home who's, like, immunocompromised and he doesn't want to go to work, that's totally his right, and I respect that fully. But the minute you make it about money, I think you're totally wrong. And especially, think you got to consider, right? So if players start holding out for money, he's not only hurting himself, but he's hurting the rest of MLB, right? Everyone.
Well, and sorry, we got to cut you off. We're up against it. I agree with everything you're saying right there. Players have the right to feel safe. Owners have the right to come in and try and make their business happen the way they want to. But through all of it, if the discussion becomes about money and is perceived as greed by either side, that's something I'm not sure baseball fans will ever forgive. Have a great weekend.